Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bills fall to New England with their fancy, white, blingy rivalry jerseys last night. 23-20 wasn't enough. I like how they looked. I knew I would. I was excited about it. Being in the crowd, there was a little bit of sort of like a prom, the bling aspect to it that, I don't know, was not off-putting, but a little bit distracting how sparkly the shoulders, you know, the helmets, how sparkly the Bills were.
Prom.
A little bit
me?
Of a.
Prom me?
Yes. I mean, a little bit kind of, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but a little bit fancy for a football uniform.
All right.
I don't know. Eric Wood with us now.
Sparkles.
Nothing fancy about Eric.
Sparkles. Eric, were the numbers hard to see from the press box?
Yes, they were. And, you know, when you get the 13 personnel on the field, we're like, okay, Knox has got a towel hanging from his back, you know, trying to find some differentiators with certain players out there on the field to figure out who was making plays and whatnot. So Chris Brown, that's a much tougher job for him than me. He's calling it live and he's got to get the right names and numbers. I can kind of piggyback what he says. But, there was some difficulty in it. But I thought overall it was a pretty cool look. And, you know, the Bills content team always does such a good job of, you know, promoting it and making it a big deal and all the lead up. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't get the win. So people, all that gear that everybody bought, is if this ends up being a one-time thing, you know, you won't have a great memory of that special jersey you bought.
Well, I believe they are scheduled. It's a three-year run is what I read. And this will be in, like, I think the Bills will wear this at least one time the next two seasons after this, is what I understand that plan to be. So, yeah, it's not going to be one and done, despite the lack of success in yesterday's threads. I've seen some of that on social media today. Like, just get these uniforms out of here because that was bad. Mm. And, like, I don't think it works that way, probably. So,
yeah, a lot of uniforms would get retired.
What will you take away? What are you taking away from this loss, Eric?
Yeah, for me, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, you have sloppy play that ends up catching up to you. We've seen sloppy moments on both sides of the ball for the Bills this season. It's early in the year. You know, you can make it, you know, you're not going to play perfect games. There's going to be lulls on offense. You're playing against NFL players. Even if it's, you know, a badly ranked defense, you're going to have lulls throughout the game. You rarely ever have a game like we had against New England in the playoffs where it's everything's perfect. And then defensively, you know, not to make excuses, but when you have so many guys that are either dinged up or suspended or whatever it may be, you're going to struggle at times. And I thought yesterday the defense took a step in the right direction, especially in the first half, in stopping the run. And then ultimately, you know, was there too soft of coverage at times last night? Of course. There were times that I wish the pass rush was better. Now, the Patriots are keeping in seven a lot of times with double chips on the outside, helping both tackles with the edge rushers. And you can do that in a game where, or you feel comfortable doing that in a game where inside you don't have their best interior pass rusher in Ed Oliver. And so, you know, and maybe Michael Hoyt becomes one of those guys inside on passing downs as well in the future. But to me, you know, it's almost a tip your cap to Drake May and Diggs. You know, tip the cap. They made plays in the second half especially that won them the football game. But if the Bills don't have all the penalties in the first half offensively and they don't have those two fumbles, I think it's another 30-point night. Mm-hmm. We win the game again, and we're sitting here having a similar conversation as we had the last 2 weeks where it wasn't the prettiest, but it's another Bills victory.
They did get a lot of help on their last touchdown drive themselves, though, the Bills, with those two back-to-back roughing the passer and then personal foul penalties there. But, you know, you might think, because we've seen it so many times, they get their, you know, they get their points anyway. Although in the end, I mean, it wasn't enough. Why or how, Eric, do you think New England was able to do it defensively here? What was it up front, game plan, anything? Because while Allen, I mean, certainly made plays in this game, he was off his spot a lot and maybe even quick to be. That's just one possible, you know, perspective.
No, I mean, I think New England has good outside corners. So if you get obvious pass situations, it's going to be tough to throw the football on the outside against them. I thought coming into the game, one of my keys to the game yesterday was to attack in the pass game, the middle of the field, the safeties and the linebackers. And Kincaid goes for over 100 for the first time in his career. Shakir's our second leading receiver. He's getting most of that production through the middle of the field. And so I thought they attacked them well there. I just felt like in the first half, I mean, I guess give New England credit for punching at the football, but this is a Bills team that generally takes care of the football. They haven't lost a fumble offensively since the Ravens regular season game last year, and I believe that was in September. And so they were able to force a couple fumbles, and then the penalties in the first half, which I'm not saying, you know, does Hockey League call a tight game and seems that he is not generally on the Bills' side, yes. But a lot of those pre-snap penalties, the holds and all that, now you're in obvious pass situations. It's hard to stay balanced. And like I said, it's hard to throw on the outside against those two corners. And so that, and with all of that, you're only going into the half down three. And then the second half, you find a better offensive rhythm, but you still make enough mistakes that of not winning the game. And Shope, I saw what you saw as well, as far as there was a couple different pressure schemes that caught Josh Allen off guard. There was a cornerback blitz. There was another one earlier, which left one of the defensive linemen unblocked because we didn't have enough blockers. Both of those either resulted in sacks or pressures. And then late in the game, maybe some escaping the pocket a little quickly because of potentially some of those earlier looks that got them.
Yeah, like even there's a play, I don't know if you've seen it, Eric, but it's made the rounds all day today, of the 3rd and 10 that preceded the tying field goal the Bills end up kicking, where Allen appears to bail out of a clean pocket. He's got Samuel running across the formation from his right to left. And even with the safety staying home on that side of the field, it's still pretty open. I'd even give it wide open, and I'm a real stickler about that. But Allen, I think the spy, whoever that was on that play, is uncovered in the middle of the line. And Allen sort of, it feels to me like Allen looks right at him and thinks, this guy's coming and no one's here, so I got to get out of here. And instead, the guy just sort of drifted. As Allen drifted out to his right, this guy moved out to his left and sort of mirrored him a little bit rather than coming in through that hole. Easy for us to say, watching it back 100 times, that, you know, he didn't have to bail out on that pocket. But the bigger thing is not seeing Samuel there. Anyway, it just all adds up to, they were in a lot of obvious passing situations. You used that phrasing a moment ago, because the run game for the first time all year just really could not get going.
Yeah, for sure. And then there were times where you'd pop a decent run, it's a hold. Well, now it's 2nd and 15 and you're not likely going to run the ball in that situation. And on the play with Allen, I saw that as well. And, you know, I never played quarterback, so I don't know exactly, you know, in that moment what his process is there. I will say Josh Allen has made a living making highlight reel plays where that right defensive end, the defensive end to his right, comes under the tackle, and then he rolls out, finds a guy on the move, and we all celebrated. And, you know, we don't maybe look to see if there was a guy coming open the other way. And there's times where he does that, and we probably don't even notice because the Bills win by 13, 14 points. But in a critical moment, it's extremely valuable there. And so, like I said, I don't you know, I don't want to even pretend like I've sat in a quarterback's meeting to know where, hey, Josh, that defensive end comes underneath. They're likely trying to funnel you out that way so that the spy can come mirror you. You know, I'm sure Josh, I'll say this, I'm sure Josh would love to have that play back. And
sure.
Shoot, there's games that Josh lights it up and wins an AFC Offensive Player of the Week award, and he probably sits there and films the next day, kicking himself over plays very similar to that one.
I just had an instinct earlier with respect to that play to blurt out that maybe he wouldn't have been able to see Samuel as easily because everything is white. But I meant it as a joke, and not, then, since I've said it, I'm not even sure it's funny. Like it might have been thing. You never played quarterback. What else did you play, by the way? Were you always a lineman?
I played tight end until my senior year of high school, and then that's when my journey as a lineman started.
Okay. Was that hands related, Eric, or just, you know, you were so big and powerful, they had to move you inside?
It was frame related, and I give Jeff Rom, the head coach at the University of Louisville, who was our quarterback's coach at the time recruiting Cincinnati area. I was a 6'4", 205 tight end, which isn't even that big by tight end standards my junior high school. And he said, your shoulders are so wide, and I just feel like you could really put on some weight and be a really athletic offensive lineman as opposed to a fairly athletic, you know, tight end. And I took his word for it, and I ended up getting one scholarship offer, and he offered it, so I'm glad I followed his advice.
Yeah. Right, that's a fit. Did you ever play defense? You probably would have played defense, too, in high school.
We only played one side of the ball at my high school, but growing up until high school, I would play both ways, and I would play either defensive end or defensive tackle.
Big school.
So, Eric,
we had some success in high school. Not to brag, but we were pretty good. We were top 10 in the country my last 3 years and won 2 Ohio State titles. So we were pretty good.
Pretty good.
Last 3 years. I mean, high school's only 4. So, I mean, that's a pretty good rate there. You were clip top. What did you make of Drake May? I mean, I phrased it, and maybe I should reel it back in. He looks to me a lot like Josh Allen light. He was every bit of Josh Allen last night.
Yeah, he looked good. I mean, I watched him play some in college and thought, this guy could have a serious future. He seems to have that competitiveness in him, that improvisational skills with also having the arm talent, size, speed, and still being able to operate from the pocket. So to me, when asked about the quarterbacks in last year's draft class, my take that I would have drafted Drake May over Jaden Daniels and anybody else didn't look very good last year when Jaden Daniels wins the AFC Offensive Player of the Year. And, you know, Drake May's playing with the worst offense in all of football based upon the people that were surrounding him. I thought he looked good last night. He made some plays. You know, it's the first team with a winning record that Drake May has beaten. Now, that might not be that fair to him considering how bad his surrounding talent was last year in New England. But, you know, he's got a great competitive drive to him. He made some great plays last night. There was, you know, a couple plays to Diggs along the sideline, and I don't want to say they're 50-50 plays, but they're inches away from being an incompletion. If those don't go their way, then we might be having a different conversation today. But I like what I see in him, and I wish he wasn't in the division.
Yeah, right. I don't know from your vantage point, and you've got a job to do, how much time you're able to spend looking at Diggs, watching Diggs on the sideline, you know, and just all that you get from him in a game. You've seen him for years, of course. I was the third row right behind their bench. And, man, he is just, like, all over everything. He's probably – well, we know this. I mean, he might be a lot for coaches or for teammates sometimes because you maybe can't calm him down, but it's probably also what makes him great. Still, there was tons of energy on the Patriot side, and not just once they got a 10-point lead either. And you'd have to say, I think, that Diggs has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, when a guy in Stephon's situation is going back to play a former team, it's not everybody that's going to have this kind of emotional thing. It's how big of a name he was in Buffalo, the success we had, how he left, and everything else. You know, I'm sure throughout the week they were talking about that a lot. And, you know, there's times where Stephon goes to the sideline and sits on the bench when we see that in Buffalo. And then there's other times where he's chirping throughout the game and trying to get everyone going. I mean, he's pretty inconsistent as a person, just in general. I think that's pretty well noted just from his time in Buffalo and this offseason and all that. But I'll say this. I haven't said this to anybody else. I had a teammate, a really good buddy of mine was his teammate in Minnesota. And when we traded for Diggs, I asked him, what are we getting in Stephon Diggs? He said, Stephon is great till he's not. And we got that experience in Buffalo. And last night, the Patriots got great Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, they're still in the honeymoon period. And that right. might have been, you know, right. obviously
the
peak.
That's not like a shocking statement, but it just like, it kind of sums it up. Like, I'm sure, and I got to see it through the NBC coverage that was on in front of us where we're checking replays. I mean,
right.
they had him on the camera constantly last night, and he was chirping. He's playing to the moment and all that, and I get that. I mean, and there were times during games where I had to be more vocal on the sideline or whatever it may be. I'm not saying that every game I had the exact same demeanor on the sideline as well as a captain of the team, but – you know, Stephon was putting on a show last night.
Eric, the Bills and Patriots meet again December 14th, week 15, more than 2 months away. Here's New England's schedule between now and then. They're 3-2. Saints, Titans, Browns, Falcons, Bucks, Jets, Bengals, Giants. How good can they be? Is this going to be a race?
It could be. It could be. And, you know, if they can stay healthy on both sides of the ball, they have a good squad, and they can be a tough team. And Abel can get them to play with that type of effort, intensity each and every week that they played with last night in Buffalo. I mean, that not that the Bills weren't up for that game, but that's a litmus test for New England. All they heard all week was, you know, this. Let's see if you could stack up. I mean, it's essentially what we all felt like when we went against New England during my time with the Bills. Okay, we're off to a decent start here, but now we play the Patriots. Here we go. Let's see what we got. Let's give them our best shot. And so we'll see if they can bring that same intensity each and every week that we saw and playmaking ability and all that. But, you know, we all said it before the season. We thought New England was likely our biggest competition within the division. And Bills had a real opportunity last night to separate themselves and give themselves a nice cushion there. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, when you get the number 4 pick in the draft, you get to play the worst teams from the other divisions. And that's part of where the parity comes from in the NFL.
Right. They have the same schedule as the Bills, except they play the Raiders instead of Kansas City, and they've lost to the Raiders. And then they would play whoever it is from the AFC South, Tennessee. Whereas the Bills would play Houston.
Yeah.
You know, earlier I did their next 3 games, then I realized I could keep going, and then with you I just did their next 8. Here's the rest of it. The bye week is before the Bills rematch. Then they go Ravens, Jets, Dolphins. That's a playoff team. With that schedule, that's a playoff team, at least.
I would assume so. Yeah, I would assume so. Yeah, like I said, I mean, you could never predict injuries throughout a season. I don't know how deep that team is. I don't know how deep most teams are in the NFL.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, that's a different defense without Christian Gonzalez, who, you know, returned to the lineup a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago. This was his 3rd game back, I believe, against the Bills. But it's a different defense without him. It's a different, you know, offense without maybe a couple guys. And so we'll see how it all shakes out. But, yeah, it looks – I'm not going to predict them to run the table, obviously. But
no.
Yeah, it sure looks like they'll be a playoff team.
Eric, recognizing that the game is still not even 24 hours old here, do you think from watching it and now, you know, talking about it a few different times today and just thinking on it, did New England discover some antidote to the Bills' rushing game? Hawes might have played the least snaps he played since the opener. I didn't go back and look, but it was down from what they had been doing in previous weeks.
We're not sure. They just couldn't read the numbers either.
Maybe that's possible, I guess. But did they do anything special that you noticed to thwart the Bills' rushing game? Because it's been so much of who they've been here for the last season plus.
Yeah. I don't know that there's an antidote other than, they have three good defensive tackle DN guys. It's not a traditional old school 3-4 defense, but they play with a bigger base defense than most. And most teams don't have that. And that's where you saw them maybe not getting as much 13 personnel and 22 mm-hmm. personnel that we saw, because they can match it. And those guys are used to playing. You know, the Dolphins go to a 4-4 defense to try and stop the Bills' rushing attack with 13 personnel, and they don't even run that. So you feel really good about, you know, taking advantage of the scheme that they're putting in on the same week. I truly believe that if the Bills could have stayed in rhythm, if they could have caught a lead, if they wouldn't have continuously backed themselves up with penalties, that James Cook could have had another productive night. But when you're constantly moving backwards, it's just, it's hard to stay in a rhythm with the run game. You know, it's hard for James Cook. You know, generally I'm like, hey, here's the body blows, 4 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards. Eventually he's going to pop one. Well, it's like, it's hard to get back-to-back runs when here comes another hold or a pre-snap procedure. And that's not a ref blame. That's a self-inflicted, you know.
Yep.
You get pre-snap penalties and offensive PI on screens. That's your own fault.
That handoff to Knox that didn't work out. Interesting. I want to talk about this some more as we go today, because sitting in the crowd, like, why would you need to run that? You know, you're trying to establish this game, and now we're doing a little bit of something akin to a trick play. They get the ball right back. And remember the first play after the Patriots fumble? It's a flea flicker.
Flea flicker.
Yeah. Like, to me, that would suggest, and these are maybe in the point of the game where the plays are scripted in advance, that there was a little bit of insecurity about what they could do, if you will, straight up against New England, coming out with reverses and flea flickers so early. I mean, they completed the flea flicker, not for huge yards, but they did get that off, at least. I know, maybe.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't feel like Joe Brady went into the game thinking we can't go against them straight up. My guess would be they got the situation where they felt really good about when they pack in their base defense, Knox can outrun someone to the corner. We get that on film. Now everyone's got to prepare for it. Every time our tight ends go in motion, shoot, they could hand the ball to him too.
Yeah.
It ended up in disaster. I don't think we'll see it again this year. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll see it this week. My guess is, I often talk about it on the broadcast, in between the 40s after a turnover, that's the area of the field that everyone loves a shot. Oh, turnover, let's take a shot. Here we go. Let's take a shot. And the Bills likely, and just guessing, came into the game. We get a turnover between here, mm-hmm. flea flicker. We're going to try and catch them off guard and take them down the field. It's either that or Joe Brady said, oh, man, I know I'm going to get crushed for getting cute. Let me try this again.
I'll show
and
him.
If this weren't crushed anymore, and I say that, I'm sure he didn't think that. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they were confident that they could get some yards on that one.
I didn't notice if anybody was running deep on that play. You would think so. On
a flea flicker usually, yeah. But neither did I see. No,
they got 20 from Samuel there. Okay, Eric. So
they went to take the deep shot. And that's what happens a lot of times. Everyone sucks up. You think it's a run. Then the safety says, oh, shoot, I got to get all the way back so we don't give up the home run. And then you generally get the crosser on those plays.
Okay. Monday night next week. So we'll talk again on the pregame show, I guess.
Absolutely. I'll be tuning in from Atlanta.
Yes, sir. All right. Thanks, Eric.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, have a good week. We'll check in with you, next Monday. Like Mike said, we will handle pregame during our portion of the show, and that will feature Eric along with Chris Brown in the roundtable segment as we get closer to kickoff. Eric's appearance with us here today on WGR is brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, and by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
People should know, Bulldog hates the Falcons. No one hates the Falcons any more than he does.
That's right.
Just who hates the Falcons? What have they ever done? But that's why you hate them.
That is why
they haven't ever done anything.
Right. I don't think their fans even like them.
Nobody likes.
I don't think their fans like them. I think they barely exist.
They'll be off a bye. They did not play this weekend. Monday night game tonight is Chiefs-Jaguars. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here. Football Monday at 803-0550. We'll look for your calls again next. Sal joins us at 5. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm getting a
Mad Men kind of.
I was starting at Mad Men actually too, and thinking a little bit more like in an office or a doctor's office.
Took a turn there.
No. Nightclub.
Things changed.
I don't know.
Anyway,
who is the betting favorite to win the AFC North at the moment?
Baltimore.
Correct. +100 Pittsburgh +110
1-4 3-1 are the records there, right? Pittsburgh had a bye, so they did not play this week.
And the Ravens are something like a touchdown underdog at home to the Rams this week. Somehow, people are still betting them to win the AFC North?
I guess, yeah.
Somebody will. Cincinnati doesn't seem so inclined. I made a Cleveland bet last week, and I felt good Sunday morning. Like, that was kind of their game.
Yeah, they really had it the whole way, weren't right? I mean,
pretty much.
I didn't sit with it. I was golfing, but I saw the end, and I was just, you know, and I had checked the score once it started. I'm like, all right, yeah, this is kind of what I thought this game would be. Probably, you know, not a lot happening for either offense. You got a rookie quarterback. You got Carson Wentz. You got good defenses. But, yeah, they let it get away from him at the end.
Did you see the video of the missed field goal by the Vikings?
I did not.
I didn't notice it. Announcers didn't seem to notice it. But it looks in slow motion like the kicker hit the camera.
Oh, the what? Yeah, I did see some reference to there being some incorrect implementation of a ruling involving the sky cam.
And the ball just sort of shot right after it was up in the air.
Wow, that doesn't seem like that should be. You should get to re-kick.
Something. You should at least get to re-kick.
Yeah, that is not a normal occurrence. That's
something from not, I guess I didn't really notice this last year when I went to the Jaguars game, or it was just that we were sitting higher up, but the what do they call them, spider cam? The two cameras that are attached to the very top of the light fixtures at the top of the stadium, that's incredible. That's incredible that exists. And that somebody is, you know, driving that with that much, and the wires to be able to hold that and have it move so fast, that's pretty great. I don't know what I imagined. I know there's a camera right over the huddle all the time. I feel like maybe I thought it was a drone or something. I don't know, but I don't think I did. But it's on these wires that are just amazing how they're just connected and how that works, I thought, last night. Just it's zipping, zipping around this camera. Pretty good. Let's go to Bill next. Hi, Bill.
Oh, is that me?
Yeah, Bill, you're on the radio. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. Good. Thank you. I wonder what you think about this this line of thought, see if there's any merit in it. As an offense, wouldn't it be fair to say that you want to scheme things and have plays and playmakers that the defense has to worry about, and they have to that complicates their game plan, right? Sure. The more weapons you have, the more things you can do, the more harder you are to play against. I think that's
sure. Yeah, that's a solid premise,
right? Okay, so going along that line of thought, there's a collective consciousness out here of people who think that Josh doesn't have all the tools that he needs, especially receivers. I know this isn't a new idea, but if we had receivers, I think that would open up the game, especially somebody who was a deep threat, because without a deep threat, teams don't have to plan for it. And if they watch us enough, we're kind of a dink and dunk. With there are exceptions, of course, but we're a pretty short passing game team now. And if we don't stretch the field at least, I don't know, six times a game with a, something they can worry about, with a realistic chance of it getting received, then that's just one thing the defense doesn't have to worry about. And I think that's a real problem for us. I think it's, I think we have an urgent need to get somebody who's a legitimate speedster, a deep threat, sure-handed receiver, and that'll open up our game. The other observation about that is it seems to me, I don't have all the numbers because I'm not home, that we have spent a lot of capital and a lot of draft choices on our defense. And see, I don't know if I'm real happy with the results, as opposed to why didn't we do more and why aren't we doing more to help Josh? What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, this is really maybe most recently it's the conversation that spurred the general manager of the team to be rather hostile towards our morning guys. It's Xavier Worthy is baked into this point. Any other receivers that the Bills could have gotten their hands on that they've chosen not to. Do they have enough there? I mean, you know, a lot of us have been saying pretty consistently, despite their success, that they don't. And, you know, yesterday is the kind of game where, you know, that's a team that can take you on man on man, and you got to be able to beat that. And the Bills have not proven to be any better at that. They weren't any better at it last night, anyway, than they were last year before they made the Amari Cooper trade. They had the same problem last fall, and they addressed it in that way. Now, he was not a speedster like you're referring to, but the same problem is still there, I think, and thus that same conversation is there to be had. I think it's almost evergreen at this point. Are you giving enough resources? Have you used enough premium resources even on that side of the ball to make sure that you are putting enough around this once-in-a-lifetime quarterback? I think it still, you know, at best, I think you can just say TBD on that. At worst, you'd go, of course not. Look at it.
Yeah, I mean, we've just been over it so many times, and they lose a game, and it's like, well, what's the problem? And when they were winning, a lot of people were saying that this is a problem. It's very much like last year. You know, they had a great season last year. They weren't perfect. You get to the playoffs, and you roll the ball out, and let's see. And they've come up short each of these times. That doesn't mean that has to happen again, but you know, last night, when you lose, it brings all that back to the surface. It's the point about how if I can't get the ball down the field, that which is what a defense wants to prevent me from doing, then I have to run 12 play drives, you know? Then I have to be that, you know, on point. And last night, they weren't. And they lost, you know? But Eric is right. A lot of what he said was the timing of it, not getting going earlier, I think is a good point. I think that's fair. And even with the turnovers, they still scored on their percentage of drives. Like, they were not shut down at all overall in this game either. But the turnovers are missed opportunities. So, but that's what – I think that's how you have to do it to beat them. And maybe that's any good team. This is what you have to do to beat them, is force them into long drives where they just don't cough the ball up during, you know, that whatever 10 or so plays it is.
I mean, you can almost always – sort of piecemeal the score together and how it would have been different if this had happened and if this hadn't happened, etc. But you give the ball away on your own 10 or 11 yard line, and you turn the ball over at whatever that was, New England's 20 or whatever. It was field goal territory. It's 6 points right there. That is 6 points in the game that you cost yourself. Three for them. You held them to the three, so good for you and your defense there. And you cost yourself at least three, maybe seven. So, what did we do? You lost a game by 3 points. So there's the cost of the turnovers right there. Plainly, those are scoring opportunities that you gave them and that you took from yourself.
Let's go to Keith next. Hi, Keith.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon to you both.
Thank you.
Just feeling a little inclined to, and I know you both don't need a reminder, but just for the fan base, this clamoring for wide receiver that's been going on forever, I'm on it too, but this is a philosophical decision by this coaching staff. They don't, we want a receiver. Everyone's calling in today saying, we need a receiver. We need speed. We need to go downfield. They don't want to go downfield. They want James Cook to run the ball really well so that all these other receivers can look good in their moments because they're wide open after the running game's established. They like to hike the ball inside 5 seconds on the play clock every play. I've watched that for 2 years. And when you play that way, of course they're going to focus on the turnover margin because you can't make any mistakes when you drain the clock. So I love receivers. I'd love to go downfield. They used to do that. They don't want to do that anymore. So I have no expectation that mm-hmm. they're going to try to get that player.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's not an accident. It's it is so. I appreciate you saying you guys don't need to hear this. It's been just years of.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This complaint, you know, read Bean or listen to him on this subject back in the offseason. Read him with Tyler Dunn, you know, just like he makes good points. Whether that's the Coleman pick, the Kincaid pick before Palmer signing, you know, these, it's not only that there's this, you know, whatever, to whatever extent you want to go with it, blanket philosophy that they don't want X, like the caller is saying here, but they've made some effort to get difference makers that can catch the ball, and results have been mixed. I mean, I think that's maybe even being kind. Palmer's $11 million, right? Mm-hmm. That's $1 million a catch so far. You know, like that's, I know it's only five games, but it comes as no surprise to me that he's at 12 catches. You know, they're good yards per catch plays, but through five games. Like that's, he's never been a guy that's going to command the ball. And that's all of them. Shakir is the closest they come to this. But we know that the ceiling is relatively low on him. And he might even be down a little bit. I don't know if he's down a little bit. Now we got, did you know this? I didn't know it until half an hour ago that Coleman was sat to start this game.
Yeah,
another discipline thing.
I just saw that. I saw that today. McDermott, he must have been asked about it. I don't know, maybe he volunteered. I don't know what context in which it came out, but it came up.
So Shaver happened. Started.
And it's not the first time.
No.
It was made known today.
Shaver started the game, and Coleman was in there pretty quick. But
it was still, the first series, I think, is what it was. Yeah.
Okay. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio at 5. Football Monday on WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.